Welcome to EJB Talks, Rutgers Blaustein School experts in policy, planning, and health, where we talk with our faculty and staff experts, as well as students, about how the fields of public policy, urban planning, public health, health administration, and public and urban informatics affect your lives. Welcome to EJB Talks. I'm Stuart Shapiro, the interim dean of the Blaustein School, and the purpose of this podcast is to highlight the work my colleagues, our alumni, and our students in the fields of policy, planning, and health are doing to make the world, the country, and New Jersey a better place. Today, as with the other podcast we released today, we are taking a break from our season-long theme of highlighting representatives from the Blaustein Research Centers to focus on the story of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. My guests today are Solomia Mikulic and Professor Andrea Hetling, two members of the Blaustein community with family ties to Ukraine. Thanks to both of you so much for appearing today.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Let me start with you, Solomia, actually, and start by getting to know you a little bit. Can you talk about your background and the family you still have in Ukraine?
Yeah, so I was born in Ukraine, and my family got to move to the United States at the age of 11. So we have been residing here for 10 years. However, all of my family is still back in Ukraine, kind of scattered throughout different parts, but mostly staying in the West Ukraine. I have a lot of family ties there, and we go back to Ukraine often, mostly in the summer. It's very nice, but it's also a good way to connect back with my culture and with my family and getting to see them and talk to them and seeing my cousins grow up and things like that. So it's very nice to go back and see everything that I'm not able to see here.
And Professor Hetling, can you talk about your connection to Ukraine?
Sure. So unlike Solomia, I was born here in the States. It was my grandparents that immigrated here. So I'm a second generation Ukrainian American. And growing up in the States, ties to the Ukrainian community were always very important. I have a pretty large family here in the States, and actually met my husband through the Ukrainian community. So his parents were born in Ukraine. We've raised our kids with close ties to our Ukrainian church, to a youth organization that has a branch here in New Jersey. My husband was able to take our son to Ukraine a couple summers ago before the pandemic, and he was able to meet some of his relatives there. Like Solomia, our family is mostly from the western part of Ukraine, in and around a city called Ivano-Frankivsk. And we've been able to keep in touch pretty well until today, where things were for some reason, harder to get through the phone lines. We're hoping that changes soon, but we've been in close contact with them.
So I'm going to direct most of my questions to Solomia. Professor Hetling, though, please feel free to speak to any of them, and certainly your voice is always welcome.
Happy to defer, and I should have said that earlier. I think Solomia's perspective offers a much stronger and direct connection with events that are happening there, and happy to chime in when it relates to the Ukrainian-American community here. But Solomia, I'm also really excited and interested in having you share your perspective with the listeners.
Great. Well, let's start. I think many of our listeners probably don't know a lot of the recent history in Ukraine. And so I was hoping maybe you could put in context for us a little bit and talk a little bit about what your family has said to you, Solomia, about Ukraine becoming independent back in 1991.
Yes, of course. Ever since I was a child, we always talked about the Soviet Union and how I was living back there. But really, my parents always focused on telling me once Ukraine became independent and how different that was. So in 1991 is when we became independent, in August 24th. And I just had actually recently discussed with my dad, you know, about the feelings and how everyone was feeling when that was announced. And he told me that everyone was so happy, and this was something that a lot of Ukrainian people were waiting for, to finally have our culture, our language, our music, and our traditions be out and open and free, and being able to practice what we wanted to and not be restrained by the Soviet regime. Especially my dad mentioned how happy his father was, my granddad, and that this was a moment that he was waiting for many, many years. And it was a very exciting time for everyone. As my dad explained, when they were growing up in the Soviet Union, there was a lot of restrictions and a lot of things that they could not do. Could not leave the country, couldn't even, you know, speak our own language that we love and we cherish. So when Ukraine became independent, it was just joy. Everyone was very happy and everyone was very excited to finally see our country grow into something beautiful and prosperous. Yeah.
I mean, that's something nobody here really has much experience with, that complete change in the type of world you're growing up in or the country you're in, going from one type of regime to a completely different one. It's definitely a different perspective than people in this country have, even the ones that think they have it. So let's fast forward a little bit. By now, if I count right, you're either in the United States or about to come into the United States. And we have the Maidan Revolution, the Revolution of Dignity in 2014. What was your experience with that, your family's experience, both here and back in Ukraine?
Yes. So when the Revolution of Dignity happened, it was only a year in since we got here. So it was very scary in that sense when we first found out about the protests going on. However, it was a very important revolution for my people because it really showed how resilient we are. Just some context on what happened. So our president at the time was making people believe, or leading people to think, that we would become a part of the European Union, which is something that we've been pushing towards, you know, to cut our ties from Russia and kind of actually become our own independent country, not having any dependence on them, and becoming a part of Europe and becoming more civilized, as you can say. And last minute, he changed it and said that we're not going to join the European Union. And our people were very angry. We were very angry. I remember watching the news with my parents, and that was just a shock to everyone. So it makes me really proud that this revolution started, because it really shows how important it is for us to move forward, learn more, attract people to our beautiful country that is so worth seeing. There's so many things to see. So it was a scary time, but it was also a time where I was very proud to say that I'm Ukrainian and very happy to show people, like, this is my land and this is my country, and we can do anything if we want to.
And yeah, certainly it was another benchmark in the sort of separation between Ukraine and Russia. And unfortunately, that brings us to current times. And you used the word scary to describe your sentiments in 2014. And I can only imagine what they are like now. So to the extent you're comfortable doing so, if you could talk about your reaction to the events of the past week, and what, if anything, you're hearing from people that are still in Ukraine that you're close to.
Yes. So I remember Thursday, it was Thursday night. My mom had called me, it was 1 a.m. And, you know, she just said, Solomia, there's a war. They started shooting. So I remember my heart sank. And it was kind of an unreal moment where I was like, it's fake. you know, it's not happening. There's no way, you know, it's the 21st century. We're so ahead of time and we're so technologically advanced and everything, but a war is happening in Ukraine. And it was happening and it was true. And I had went to sleep and I was like, this is just a nightmare. Like, this is not true. And when I woke up, kind of a sad feeling sunk in. Once I started talking to my family and talking to my friends and really hearing their perspective, and even they themselves weren't exactly sure that it was happening. Like, I had a friend who was like, oh, it's okay, like, we're okay day one, and then it all sunk in that this was real. My aunt, who is in Sumy right now, and that is an active war zone, and it's been very hard to talk to her because of everything going on. And we're just very fearful for them and their safety. And they have a little girl who's only 4, and you know, it's a hard thing to explain to children of what's going on. And it's also an unfair thing that children have to go through this, elderly have to go through this, adults, anyone. It's unfair. That's a lot of the feelings that the Ukrainian community is having, that this whole thing is unfair, that all we're trying to do is just be independent and grow into something bigger and better, and these ties to Russia are just holding us back. But also Putin and his vision, we can say, of us being united brothers, but we've never been, you know, my country, even before our independence, you know, it's in our history, we've always been fighting for freedom. And it's a very hard thing to go through for everyone, I think. It's very tough.
Yeah. And again, not something that we have experienced, certainly in this country, and even in Europe, with the exception of the Balkans in the 90s, not the type of experience that most of us in the West have been very fortunate to live through. And so it's a horror, and clearly you're going through a lot there. I am a public policy person, so I always have to ask the question, what would you, if you know, you had your druthers, if you were God Emperor of the United States, what would you like to see the United States be doing?
You know, so I just recently became a U.S. citizen, so now I also feel like I have more power and bigger voice to be able to have, you know, make change happen in our country, but also have influence in other countries. And I think a really important thing, or I think one of the most important things that United States can do for Ukraine is resources. You know, our economy has never been very rich, and we need resources. We need artillery. We need guns, maybe even trainings and education. I think that would very much help us out, and our army who are fighting there right now, even without everything that we need, they're still doing it. They're still fighting. But also, you know, the ultimate goal, and that's something that a lot of Ukrainian people have been asking for, and our government has been asking for, is for NATO to close the sky in Ukraine and enacted to be a no-fly zone. And I think United States, because of how powerful we are and our influence in NATO, I think they can definitely have some voice, a stronger voice, to voice that they should close the sky in Ukraine and help us out in that sense.
A lot of our listeners, of course, are not the Emperor of the United States, but rather individuals who see the horrifying images and hear your story today and may think to themselves, what can I do? And so what can individual people in the United States do to help out?
Yes. So a lot of people think because you're not Ukrainian or you don't have a friend who's Ukrainian, there's not much you can do, but there's a lot you can do. Even simplest things as spreading awareness is so important because so many people didn't even know Ukraine was a country for a very long time, you know? So even spreading awareness about Ukraine, but also what is happening, not sugarcoating things. It's bad. It's a war. We're in a war zone. And I think it's very important to be realistic about these events and letting people know of what is happening, that people are dying, children are dying. And it's not something to even joke about. It's very serious. So I think awareness is one of the first things that a lot of people can do. Additionally, a lot of the American Ukrainian community right now is hosting protests. They're collecting resources like medical supplies, food, clothes for children, blankets, and we're trying very hard to gather supplies and do anything that we can when we're so far away yet so close to our families, and we want to help our families and we want to help our brothers and sisters over there who are fighting for their freedom. So I think that's a really important thing, that even attending a protest, it means so much to me when my friends come to protest because they're my friend and they want to support me and they want to support my family. So it's very important to even come to a protest and voice yourself. Also, reaching out to your government, your local government, your state government. It's very important to voice your opinion, write letters, because they hear us. And there's always something that they can do or say or try that would help out the Ukrainian community.
From either of you, any final thoughts, anything else you'd like to share?
I just like to say thank you to you, Stuart, to the Blaustein School for organizing this podcast kind of off cycle and so well and timely. And so much thanks, Solomia, for coming on and sharing your story and really you said how important it is to raise awareness, and you're doing exactly that. The suggestions that you gave for how all people can be involved, I think are so important. And there's a number of organizations now collecting donations for humanitarian aid. Both families who are remaining in Ukraine in the shelters and those that are choosing to take shelter in neighboring countries are going to need, as you said, food, clothing, the medical supplies. And I think everything that we can do as individuals, as well as a collective body. And I applaud the Blaustein School for becoming involved.
Do you have any favorite charities you'd like to mention and point people towards?
Oh, that's a great question. So, Solomia, you may have a couple. I mean, I think that
I have a couple if you don't, but I'd rather hear from you.
There's a couple, I think, mainstream ones. There's a Save a Life UA. The Ukrainian Club at Rutgers is also hosting a bunch of fundraisers through Razum. And those are like the two main ones. A lot of people are taking personal donations and either purchasing supplies and stuff like that.
That's great. And that's an addition. I mentioned on the podcast with Sergey, which is also being released today, I mentioned a few others. And so between those and these, people have a lot of choices as to where they can donate. I tend to be someone who focuses on the geopolitical aspects of questions like this, but we must never forget that, as Solomia has so eloquently pointed out, people are dying, people are being displaced, people are terrified. So a big thank you to both of you for coming on today.
And I wanted to thank you as well for allowing me to speak about my experiences and the experiences of my community. І слава Україні!
Herom Slava.
A big thank you, as always, to Amy Cobb and Karen Olson, who worked overtime to get these out quickly and went above and beyond the call of duty. We'll let you digest these two podcasts, and then we'll be back in another week or so with another podcast from another expert at the Blaustein School. Until then, no matter where you are, stay safe.